Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Honestly, like, I was just kind of like, go, girl, like, you're strong and you're doing.
Go, girl.
Like,
go, girl.
But that's kind of what it was. I wasn't like, get on me, girl. Like, ride me, girl.
Just go, girl. Get it, girl.
Well, I mean, I was dead. Like, I was appreciative of their work.
Not appreciative of the work.
Because they're putting in fucking work.
That is true, you guys.
Honestly,
you better
it's
get
like,
it, girl.
Yeah, you just better go, girl. I hate all of you. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Tea Time with Raven and Miranda. Today, it's just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
We can make it if we try. So recently, we have been watching a show called Seeking Sister Wife.
I love this damn show. I love this show.
Yeah.
Do you love it as much as I do?
I think I love it just as much as you.
Do you like Sister Wives?
No, I think Cody is a disgusting human.
Fair. I don't think anybody in Seeking Sister Wife is disgusting. I think it is the most interesting dynamic to want to search for another human to be in your relationship for many reasons. One of the reasons I heard was because there's so much love to give. One of the reasons I heard was because being one thing, being everything for one person is a lot, so they need to share. Another thing I heard is that somebody was afraid of dying, so they didn't want to leave their wife alone. Like, the reasons are so good.
Also, raising the kids together, wanting this, like, community. Also, a lot of the women wanting to feel like they have a woman that they can emotionally connect with. And
talk shit about their husband, too.
Yeah. Are there parts of the show that make you go, oh, yeah, I could see myself doing that? Or that sounds appealing.
I mean, I thought about that even before the show was popping. But that is also because I have friends that have been in polyamorous relationships and it just looked appealing from afar. However, being that I had a friend in a polyamorous relationship and I was there through all of the thick and thins, it's a lot. And I wouldn't want to be in one with a man. I'd want to be like all female poly for obvious reasons. How about you? Would you ever be in a poly relationship based off the show or not?
So based off the show, some things that have been interesting to me are the sisterly element. I've never really thought about it that way before, but if you kind of have this like best friend relationship with another person who you're going through things with and you really are just this bigger family, I don't know, the show for the first time kind of made me go, oh, I kind of get it. The issue for me with the show is I find every single person on there completely and utterly bizarre. And I think that they are all a little bit unwell. Like, there is something off in all of these personality types. Also, the deep, deep religious element
that, to some of them, not all of them, to some of them.
To two of them is so intense that is also kind of off-putting, and it feels like a cop-out in a lot of ways. Like, so much of the justification for why and how this has to happen gets like thrown back on God, and it's like, God wants us to do this, God came to me and told me to do this. And as I'm watching, I'm also seeing that like one of the wives in the very, very religious family, I think that she's suffering. I don't think she wants to be in a polyamorous relationship. I think that she feels like she has to be because God has told them that this has to happen. And that in and of itself is also kind of complicated to watch because I don't think it's her actual desire. And then there is another family where I actually feel like everyone is in alignment. And they all want this same thing. And then the couple that you referenced about the person getting sick and wanting someone to leave with the wife, really what I see there is that's a bisexual woman who they should have an open marriage where she can go and date women as she pleases and not try and integrate this third person into the family and in such a rushed way.
Oh, they're so rushed to find someone. Speaking of the family who is, you know, God told us to do this. I do see how her emotions through the different people that she's dated, through the different fiancés, could lead someone to believe that she doesn't want it. What I see actually is her wanting a sister more than anything. Her wanting connection to another female, like you stated. Her falling in love platonically with another human to where she can then bring joy to her husband because he gets what he wants, which is his five wives. I think that their personality types, I get enjoyment out of because it's not your typical, I need to be with one person all the time, blah, 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 blah. I think that their outlook on life is so interesting and that their openness to understanding that there's so many different kinds of loves, there's so many different kinds of humans. And if you have the strength and self-awareness to be able to share your loved one, you can find a different kind of connection with human. That's difficult, though.
Yeah, I think it is really difficult. And I don't think that I have seen, and the reason I said they're unwell.
Please explain unwell.
Yeah, they're because, I'm sorry, Danny, should I do it?
Oh my God, we're doing names. Don't you do it.
No, but
don't you do it.
Oh, Gussie. I don't understand. She said she was my sister.
That is a woman who is not okay. The reason why I said I think that these people are unwell is because I don't think that anyone actually really wants it. Minus maybe the one couple that is the... Now it's two wives because the third wife left because she couldn't handle it. I think that that family the most well-adjusted, but I think that they're unwell. And even the couple that...
I think the couple that has the mother who doesn't like their...
I disagree.
I think they want that.
I don't. You know why?
Why?
Because the wife who initiated it, when it started getting into conversation and they got stood up, first of all, mm-hmm. by the woman who was coming back. But then she started getting jealous. And then she started setting all these rules. No one's allowed to sleep with you. No one's allowed to do this. This has to happen. Not with my man and with the family that you're referring to, Danny, who wants a sister. Mm-hmm. If she had a group of girlfriends, like real friends, she would be fine. This woman doesn't want to share her husband. She doesn't want that. She wants what, like you were saying, she wants a friend. And you can see, she even said, she's like, I don't really have friends. I don't know what I'm going to do for my birthday this year.
The cutaways don't help with our theory. If you watch Finding Sister Wife, the cutaways of when the person who really wants the sister wife to come, and then you cut to the partner's face is just like, mm-hmm. Okay. Like, it's not, they're not fully present.
No.
And that's okay. You know, and like you said, there are some couples on there, which I believe. And we also have to understand that this is show, right? This show is cut to bring conversation and disagreements here and there. And who knows? But when it comes to that polyamorous couple that has the two wives that are married to each other and then their black husband, and mm-hmm. they keep bringing in and out. Again, that is the root of sister wife-dom.
And like, I feel like
they're grounded.
I feel like they're the best example of actually a healthy polyamorous. Like they get it. They're doing it,
and the other people are searching, and I respect them for even wanting to dive into that world, because that is a taboo world. They are losing parents left and right, losing friends left and right, isolated because they believe and want someone else to come and share the love that they have. And I don't know, I'm entertained. Are you entertained? Yes, I am.
I am too. And it's also cut to be extremely awkward and to make you feel like, oh my God, heebie-jeebie, mm-hmm. what is wrong with this person? They also have people now on, mind you and I started on season 5.
Right.
There are 6 seasons. So we started with season 5, but now in the 6th season, which we've gotten into, there's a new couple where it's like,
the guy looks gay. He acts
Everyone in his life tells him he's gay.
He's bad for him.
I know. I do too. But that's the thing that was also really bizarre when he tells his very conservative family that he wants yet another wife. They all look at him like
start laughing.
They're like, why don't you just admit who you are? Like, what's happening? It's just so weird.
I think that's a larger conversation because there's a lot of feminine men that are not gay. Just because you're feminine doesn't mean you're gay.
Correct.
Gay is a sexual thing, not necessarily the kind of pants you wear or the way you flick a wrist.
Yeah, and unfortunately what we've done though is we have created in our minds that if
a stereotype.
So if you do see a man in presenting in this way, automatically it's like, oh, he's gay. But he does fit every stereotype down to being a show choir kid. Like it's just
But you know who else was a show choir kid?
Who?
John Legend. Not gay! Beefed it, got him
yeah.
Quiet all
yeah.
around the room. But
yeah.
this man, we go back to him because I find this new relationship interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see what he does because he has to learn, and they say this in the show, he has to learn how to snag a woman. And then to see him hit on the waitress.
Oh my God, right. Everyone.
Oh, I felt so bad for him.
So uncomfortable. It's just so, but they do that on purpose. It's so awkward.
So if you want to watch this show, it's on HBO Max. Only the last two seasons. We're looking for the other seasons and
they're on TLC where it came from.
Got it. We don't subscribe. Go down in the comments because this is a bigger conversation. Would you date someone while you're dating someone and mix and mingle that relationship?
I mean, I think a lot of people do, and the couple with the mom,
mm.
something that I appreciate in that, and that was honest, is that she talked, not the mom, but the wife, talked about her fear of being cheated on.
Oh, yeah.
And for her, part of why she initiated this, I think, is to get around that from happening. And so she made herself involved, and I know they also are Muslim, so it felt like part of the religion, and it made sense to them. But I think, like I was just saying earlier, I think there are so many layers to this stuff, and I have really yet to see a relationship where I'm like, oh, this really is. And I mean, when I talk about seeing relationships, I'm only ever seeing the ones that are televised and are put
and
on
edited.
These shows and edited and created. But they look, everyone looks miserable. They all end up becoming drama filled and chaotic and have translators because one
oh my
couple,
god, the fact that the couple refuses to get someone that speaks
they
English
keep
is crazy.
Picking their third wife or their third like wife potential
sister.
Wife from other countries
Brazil.
And they don't speak English
ever,
so then they're like having these really in-depth moments and also
and then has to press to
his thing. His name is Garrick. Garrick's whole thing is proposing the first date. So he's proposing to a woman who can't speak English on the first date and saying, I love you because God told me
Babes,
so.
That was the fifth date. It was
no,
after.
No, the first in person.
That was, they've been talking
they talk
on the
online.
Interwebs.
Yeah.
And then he flew to Brazil and on the fifth dinner, he proposed.
Because they had,
the rest
because she
life.
Was pissed. Like, because she was like, this is not what I signed up for. It's just a mess.
It's amazing. I really enjoy the show.
I mean, it's very entertaining, clearly. We've talked about it for 20 minutes. Let's get into the pot.
Okay!
Why not? Before we get into this pot, let me tell you what we're doing. We're doing a story time roulette. Today we will be pulling multiple things from the pot because we are going to play Storytime Roulette. And
I love it when you read off a card. It's so natural.
We will pull a random word from the pot and each take a turn telling a story from our lives that has to do with that topic.
Oh, this is fun. I love a game.
Yeah, so this is Storytime Roulette for anyone who didn't catch that.
Third time.
Okay, great. I'll start.
Ladies first.
Oh, then in that case.
Fuck out of here.
There's a lot in here for real.
For the first time ever.
Pumpkin patch.
Aw, babes, tell your story about the pumpkin patch.
Is there one specific one?
Yes!
Really?
Yes!
Oh, I don't know that one. I was going to say, the first thing that I think of when I think about the pumpkin patch is a photo of me.
It's literally the one I'm talking about.
Is a photo of me where my mom is breastfeeding me, and I was probably...
This is not the one I was talking about.
And it I was probably like 6 months old, and it's the farmer's market pumpkin patch
in LA.
And it became a tradition for my family to go there. And I think, I don't know, that's the first thing I think of, because I see my mom and she's so cute, and she's like sitting in the middle of this pumpkin patch. She's sitting on haystacks, and I remember her telling me the story that my parents took me there, and you know, she had to feed me, and she just did so in the middle of the pumpkin patch. But I just feel like a little pumpkin kid. I don't know.
I thought you were going to tell the story that every single time you go to a pumpkin patch or around a pumpkin, that your dad puts you on one and takes a picture.
So that is a tradition that he did start, where every year we would buy pumpkins, and then I would sit on one in the house and take a photo, and I have them up to
now.
The point of, well, I tried to do it when we went to that pumpkin patch. Mm-hmm. But I love a pumpkin patch.
You love this holiday season.
Yeah, I do.
Why?
Because it's cozy and it feels like festive and safe and just yummy, and I don't know. Everything feels good in the world. Well, it's supposed to, at least in my brain, you know. It doesn't actually, which is kind of depressing. Like, but I just like fall. I like sweater weather and everything that kind of comes with it. And even though I don't drink pumpkin spice lattes or anything like that, I appreciate the smell and baking and like cinnamon rolls and family and carving a pumpkin. I don't know. It's nice. What about you in a pumpkin patch? Any stories?
Almost got in a fight in a pumpkin patch.
The one that I was at with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell it.
I was at a pumpkin patch in New York, and I was on The View at the time, and we were getting off the pumpkin patch ride, and this girl comes up to me and starts popping off about what I said on The View, and I don't know, blah, blah, blah.
She was ready to fight you.
Clack, 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 clack. And I was just like, And my friend Carlicia started to pop off, and I was like, no, let her speak, trying to be super diplomatic and shit. Great times. I love this holiday.
That was wild. I remember watching that and I was like, oh my gosh, this person is going to hit you.
I wish she would.
She was ready to fight you.
I was ready to accept it and go up on The View and pop off.
That was crazy. The View was there.
Exactly. We were literally
filming for The View.
Yeah, that was a good time. Otherwise, as for this holiday season, you know, I've been turmoiled about holidays since I was a kid because of the way my parents raised me, of knowing that it's all commercialism and, you know, be careful of the candy that you get because there's razor blades in it. So I wasn't really allowed to eat the candy. It's just, you know, my parents, you know.
Yeah, I know. Slowly but surely, you're maybe liking some holidays.
Next topic! The club. About to go to the club. Let me talk about the club. I've had so many experiences. How y'all want me to start? You want me to start at 15? You want me to go to 20s? Or do you want me to go to the 30s?
Chronologically.
Cool, let's start at 15. Popping. Ready to go. Through the back door. On point. Dressed. Ed Hardy down. Didn't know it was me. All the famous people went out through the front. I went out through the back. I wasn't tipsy, though. I never got drunk underage. And then Lindsay Lohan was known for a lot of that. And so there was a point when they stopped letting you into the club underage because she kept getting caught getting tipsy underage.
Mm-hmm.
So she really fucked it up for everybody. And then older, you would find me at the club, bottles. But I never really was one to pay for the bottles. I was always the friend who'd be like, y'all want to get a bottle? Give me the credit card. Like, we shared it because I didn't feel like I needed to floss like that. But definitely showed up deep. And it was my culture for a while. That is exactly. But there was moments where I switched because I would go to the club in a freakum dress sometimes. And then sometimes I go to the club in my hoodies and shit. So it was always back and forth. I love the club.
So when I think of the club, the thing that I think of first is the strip club. And I remember my first time at the strip club. And I was 18. I was with my boyfriend and his group of friends. And it was a thing.
What was the name of it? You remember?
Yeah, I always.
Titties?
No, it wasn't titties. So on Friday nights, after trying to do like the milk gallon chug challenge, my boyfriend and I and his group of friends.
I'm just going to let you skip over the fact that you were doing a milk chug challenge.
I wasn't.
To the strip club. That's so weird.
They were. That was a very, like, big thing at that time. Like, people were, like, trying to eat cinnamon and eat bunch of wasabi.
Oh, got it. Okay, I'm there. I'm back.
Okay, so we would go to the strip club, and it was fun. I don't know. We would just, like, hang out at the strip club. Usually I was the only girl in the group that was with the guys, mm-hmm. and it never was weird. That was the thing. It didn't feel weird with my boyfriend there. He never made me feel like there was no comparison yeah. or anything. Like, it wasn't like I was supposed to do that or be that, but we would just hang out and have fun, and then we would leave.
Anyone who took you to the strip club to then say you need to be like this obviously is a really bad person. Have you experienced that? That's ridiculous.
I've definitely had partners who point out pretty girls or say things, you know, I think it's always a little bit just odd, even when you're with your partner and they're like, oh, look at that girl. She's so pretty. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, he never
say
did that.
When they would say that, you take it as a, you should be that pretty? You take it as a personal hit?
Yeah, I guess. I think that it's just like, I don't know, especially in that setting.
Well, I have a story about a strip club. I can't find it right now, but I have a story about a strip club. There was a guy that I was talking to. He was an actor, really handsome, so fucking beautiful, actually. He was like, let's go on a date. I'm like, I'm down for a date. And he takes me to a strip club with three of his other guys, and I'm the only girl sitting there, and my gay ass was like, y'all got money? What y'all doing, just sitting here talking about business? Y'all ain't want to get up on these tables? But I was like super prissy and cute because I thought he was so cute. And I have never been in a strip club with a guy or a girl and they point him out and then I take it personally. I'm always like, yeah, let me buy that dance for you and go on it, because if you think that they're pretty, then get your whole life. I was frequent at the strip club in New York, Texas, and Louisiana. Moving on.
Quick question though. First time in a strip club as a closeted lesbian, what was that like?
At a strip club as a closet lesbian, it is very difficult to not shine too hard. There was a woman that was at a strip club, I swear to God. She knew me so well. She's like, Raven. I'm like, mm-hmm. Do you want, mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let me just touch right here. It was so bad, you guys. It was so bad. And then I, like, play it off or whatever. But no, that solidified my ideas about myself. That's for sure. Especially during Christmas time when we went to the strip club. Strip club at Christmas time? Dessert fabulous.
How about you, Miranda, when you were with your boyfriend?
When I was there with my boyfriend, no. It didn't trigger anything in me at that time. I wasn't, honestly, there was nothing about any of those women that I found attractive that would have made me, like, I'm so specific about what I'm drawn to and what I connect with that honestly, like, I was just kind of like, go girl, like, you're strong and you're doing.
Go girl, go.
Like,
go girl.
But that's kind of what it was. I wasn't like, get on me, girl. Like, ride me, girl.
Just go, girl. Get it, girl.
Well, I mean, I was dead. Like, I was appreciative go, of girl. Their work.
Not appreciative of the work.
Because they're putting in fucking work.
That is true, you guys.
Honestly.
Yeah, break it down.
Women that have to do that and have to deal with men fully in a space where they understand that they can objectify you, which they do all day long out in the world anyway, but here's a place of permission for it.
You better it's get like, it, girl.
Yeah, you just better go, girl. I hate all of you.
Yo, that's crazy.
Something your wife doesn't know.
Shit.
Something my wife doesn't know. Oh, something my wife doesn't know is that I have new glasses.
Same glasses.
No, they're new.
But they just like the yellow ones.
No. Yeah, but they're blue.
Good job, babe.
That's something you don't know.
Get it, girl. I'm gonna use that forever. Something that you don't know? I don't know what you don't know. That's crazy. Okay, here you go. Did you know that when I was in middle school, I had a communal diary with three of my best friends?
I did.
Well, then there you go.
You told me.
See? Did you know that my math teacher found it?
Yeah.
No, well, there you go.
You told me this whole story. I know something. I mean, I have something that I think you don't know about me.
Good to know.
In elementary school, I used to make out with three girls in the bathroom. There were three different girls, and we would all, like, practice kissing.
Did you grab their head like this and bring it to them?
Every time. And they said, please do it again.
Oh.
And then we would have to, like, rush back to class. But we were in elementary school.
That's okay. I kiss people at
elementary school. And when people ask me about my first kiss, I never claim those kisses. I say that it was when I was 18 years old. And
babe, why don't you claim the lesbian kisses?
Because we were...
practicing?
We were, like, 7 or something. We were young. Yeah, and I think... and it was, like, practice kissing.
So at 7 years old...
maybe 8.
7 or 8 years old, you're in the bathroom.
Maybe 10. Let's make it 10. Let's round it up to 10.
No, I'm not going to do that. You are 7 or 8 years old in the bathroom with two other girls. Now, let me guess. Did one of them look like me? Because you got a type.
No.
Oh, wow. They were white? Asian.
One was Asian.
Korean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Understood. And what was the other one?
They were white.
Okay, so...
The other two were white. Just white girls.
So you had three? You had a Korean and two white girls?
Yes.
This one over here talking about she don't want a polyamorous relationship. She started in one at 7 years old.
We were practicing.
Yeah, you practicing how to live life later. Good girl. You know what? Let me see if I can beat that. Nope, I can't. That's amazing, babes. I'm jealous. Mm-hmm. So you can't come for me when I be like, hey, look at...
I lived a lot of life that you don't know about.
Shit, before obviously. Obviously.
I was reckless at 7.
Oy vey. Do I have to answer that question?
You already did.
Horribly.
You tried. You told me about your diary that I knew about.
Theft! Mm-hmm. My next topic is theft. I had this boyfriend once who I think stole Porsches.
Oh, that's cool.
And would drive them to other states and drop them off. But he bought a Porsche like mine that was red. And he was like, I gotta go. I gotta drive it to Arizona or some shit like that. And then he crashed it. Mm-hmm. And he bussed back home. And when I found that out, I said, you a thief. I'ma leave. And I left. So that's my closest to real theft. Otherwise, you know, I steal candy every now and then. From the kids. I'm just playing.
So, theft, I think about my ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I watched her work once.
Ooh, go girl.
And I was like, go girl. And I started sweating. She said that she needed to get a belt. So we went to Ross. And we were at Ross Dress for Less, and there were all these belts. And she, like, grabbed some, and she grabbed some shirts. And I'm like, okay, let's go to the try-on room. She goes to the try-on room. She starts trying things on. And she, like, pulled a tag. I was like, what are you doing? And she was like, don't talk to me type of thing. Like, kind of brushed me off.
Oh, and she blacked out and was in her space.
I guess. Yeah. And I was like, okay. Okay, and I, like, kind of knew what was happening, but I was also kind of in shock, but I'm also, like, not going to rat her out. It was just a weird thing, but anyway.
Good for you not snitching.
She put this belt on, took her shirt off, put the shirt on that was from the store, put that on, put a jacket on, and then just, like, we walked out.
Is this
and
who I think it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
But she black. How'd she do that?
And not real well.
Well, she must have been walking real with well. You. They probably didn't think anything about it. That's crazy.
And then the other thing I think about is I had a friend who in high school was a very, very bad addict. And she started stealing things to buy more of her drugs. And I remember one day she stole something out of my purse. And I was like, okay, listen, I know you stole from me. So what I'm going to do, it was in my car. We were in my car and she took something out of my purse when I had gone to the gas station. I don't know. Whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, so I got back into the car, noticed they were gone, and I was like, here's the deal. I'm going to get back out of the car. You're going to put my shit back, and we can pretend like this never happened, but I know you have them, and please, just, like, don't prolong the situation. So she did that, but she ended up stealing from a Sephora, getting caught and arrested, and is banned from all Sephoras.
Still to this day?
Yes.
So you got to go to Sephora for her?
I think she shops online. She's fine. Fair.
There we go. Moving on. Get it, girl.
Emergency room. Emergency room. The first thing I think about is one weekend, my sister and I, my parents separated when I was 7, and every other weekend we would go from mom's house to dad's. And I hated going to my dad's because I always felt like something bad happened and I always felt scared and I didn't want to leave my mom. So one weekend at my dad's, We're falling asleep, my sister and I, and I was really like dozing off because my father wakes me up in a panic and he was like, your sister's blue, get up. And I remember it so well. I was wearing this black shirt with Cool Guy on it, and Cool Guy was a character from a pamphlet that we used to have about not doing drugs at school. So I had my black Cool Guy shirt on, I put on my black Converse, and we rush out of the house. And
Did you put on pants?
No, I didn't actually. The shirt was like to my knees.
Oh, you didn't put on pants.
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
And I had underwear on, but like it, we had.
No, you were like old school sleep shirt ready to go. Yeah,
and it was like, your sister's not okay. And so my dad is like shaking, holding my sister and shaking her. And he's like, stay with me. Like, stay with me. Wake up. And I look at her and she's blue. Like, she's not breathing. And I remember he put her, she was three, and he put her in the front seat. I was in the back, and he was driving so fast. And we're driving to Cedar Sinai, and he's running red lights and like laying on his horn. And I remember my feet, I was pushing into the, what do
back
you call
of the seat?
It?
The, yeah, the,
but it wasn't the back
armrest.
Of the seat. Yes. So like the front seat armrest. I was pushing it and I was pretending to brake when he wasn't braking. And I remember at one point an ambulance started coming and he cut the ambulance off and it had its lights on and everything.
That's fair.
Anyway, we pull up right into the emergency room section of Cedars. He like throws the car in park, grabs my sister, runs into the emergency room. I'm still in the back seat. Like I was trembling, like knees knocking. I was so scared. And he runs in. He's like, my kid's not breathing. And he had called my mom. My mom came and met us there with my nanny named Wendy, and Wendy took me home and they stayed there. But oh, it was awful. I mean, I was very scared.
That you should be very scared. That's a crazy story, babe.
And she was okay. She had pneumonia and she just wasn't getting oxygen.
Is Mimi okay?
TBD.
Mimi, are you okay?
She's okay. I called check-in, remember? Rolled her over and there you go. She suffered the head wound from me and the pneumonia from, yeah, I don't know, the environment.
Seriously. That's a sad story, babes, and I'm sorry you had to go through that, but I'm really proud of your dad for not trying to wait, and he went into action, and even though that traumatized you, he saved his daughter's life.
Yeah.
So it's the, you know.
I'm glad he noticed.
I mean, that would have sucked. The emergency room for me, a couple of things come up, and the first one that comes up is more fun. So I'm in New York, we're living with Carlicia, and she gets the flu? Where she gets sick or something like that. And I'm like, girl, go take some Robitussin. And she's like, no, I need to go to the emergency room. I'm like, you're just sick. So we drive to the emergency room. And I feel like emergency room visits are always at 3:50 in the morning. They're never at a reasonable hour. And I was just driving. And I'm like, I'm going to take you here. But when you get dismissed, because all this is a cold, I'm going to be so mad at you, bro. Mm. And she got there and they literally just told her that. And I was like, I told you. My other emergency room visits are a little bit more emotional, and I don't want to go into it.
Is it my turn? Yep.
I got a dollar. New York subway. Wow.
Well, you don't take them.
Hell no.
When's the last... Have you ever been on the subway?
I have been on the subway in New York, and I will never go back on again. I went early 2000s. So early that you could almost say it's the 90s. I definitely been on the subway in the 90s. 80s, I should say. Mm-hmm. When I was on the subway, it was smelly, dirty, and uninhabitable, even though it was very much inhabited. And I promised myself I would never go back.
Got it.
Now, people have said it's changed. And the last time we were in New York, you were like, let's go. And I was like, there's some things I just won't. I just won't go on public transportation in New York. That is my bougie. And you know what? I'll ride coach, but I ain't going on a subway. But I will go on the London Tube. I think London Tubes are amazing. Japan has wonderful subways and trains. There's something about American public transportation that's just but the buses are getting better here in LA. And I think things are changing.
I remember the first time I took a bus.
How was that?
In LA. My grandparents took me on it, and my mom was mortified.
Yeah.
She was like, why did you do that?
And I feel bad because there's a lot of people who need to be on that transportation, and I don't want to judge you for your choices and what you need to do. I understand it. I just want the Public Transportation Association of America to use a little bit more bleach. Just to use a little bit more Windex, maybe some Febreze, and put a couple of roach traps out. And then maybe you'd see me there.
January 2020, I took the subway and got COVID. So
put your hand in the pot. Right there. That's why we're not going on it.
Helping someone.
Aww.
I think that the biggest help of someone that I ever did was when I saved my friend's life. I actually have saved my two friends.
Oh my God, she totally saved her friend's life.
I've saved two people's lives. My friend from high school and this friend.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So I have a friend who struggles with bipolar depression, and she has psychotic breaks. And she had one when she was 18, and she had one then as an adult. And this is a friend that is not close to me, but we're family friends.
And they had pictures of each other when they were like 3 and 4 years old.
Yeah, but we haven't stayed friends in our adult life. And anyhow, so like 2 years ago now, I could tell from her social media that she was not well because she was posting things that made no sense. And she reached out to me on my birthday, and I could tell from that moment that she was really, really unwell. So much so that I called my mom and I was like, hey, do you have her mom's?
I think it was deeper than unwell. She was crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because unwell is for the people that, you know, called that were
in a polyamory. Everyone is
this
unwell.
This one was crazy.
Yeah. No, she was like, she was not on this planet.
Yes.
So I called my mom and I was like, hey, have you talked to your friend so and so? Because I think her daughter is really not okay. And she said, I haven't talked to her in a few years, but here's her phone number if you want to call her. So I called her mom and I was like, hi, we haven't talked in like 10 years, but do you know what's up with your daughter? And she said, yes, she's been sick for the last 2 years and we've tried everything. We've had interventionists and we've had her arrested twice and we're trying to get her 5150 and none of it is working. And it broke my heart. It made me so sad because I know how important this person is, but also at the same time, I felt like she was just kind of abandoned. Like her, no one knew what to do. I think it honestly takes a specific kind of person and a certain, and I know it sounds like,
yes,
I'm
it takes a lesbian.
I'm inflating myself, but it takes a certain kind of intelligence that I honestly think that I
get a girl.
I think that I was kind of like gifted with. Like I think we all come in with something special, and I truly think that this is mine because I understood how to crack through her paranoia. I understood how to talk to her delusions. When I re-entered her life and she was in this space, she was so paranoid and so terrified of everyone. She wouldn't let people in her house. She wouldn't leave her house. And I was able to get into her house, have her leave her home. And I went to her house on a Sunday. And I said, by the end of this week, I will have this person in a treatment center. I will have them in a mental health facility. And I didn't have them in there by the end of the week, but that Monday I drove her to a treatment center in Malibu. Now, the thing about this story that was wild was that I also had to pretend to be Angelina Jolie to get her there. And her delusions were so thick that she knew that I wasn't when we were in person together, but she believed that she was channeling Angelina. And that she and Angelina were married, and that the only person who could tell her to do anything was Angelina. So the way that I actually was able to get her to treatment and do this was through email, writing to her as Angelina. And now I thought that once I got her there and dropped her off that Monday, that the medical professionals would take over and that she would get back on her medication and this would end. Well, it didn't. I had to pretend to be Angelina Jolie for 3 months over email with the therapists there then conscious of what was happening and trying to work through it with her, but also they had to keep her there because she wasn't 5150'd. And it became this whole thing. I mean, it was huge and it was extraordinarily intense and required so much maneuvering, so many conversations. So much time of my life during those 3 months was committed to this and to getting this person well. And it saved her life, because I don't think anyone else in her circle at that time or in her world knew what to do. And they'd been trying for 2 years to do that. And yeah, and so a life was saved.
Good job, babes. I witnessed it. You came in and you saved the day.
How did you help someone?
I gave money. A friend of mine was in trouble with the law, and I helped with their lawyers. That was a big deal for me, because that was a lot of money. And still went to jail. My bad, bro. My bad. Couldn't help you out that much. Moving on. I don't have anybody like you. I don't really have people like your scenario in my lifestyle. So when you were going through that, I was like, yo, this is crazy. You doing all this? That's amazing. I was not helping the situation very much. But I still enjoyed watching you succeed. My helping people. I give people jobs. I think that's helping. That's totally fair. Old friends. I am in contact with a lot of my old friends from middle school. Nobody really from high school, from different jobs. I'm a Sagittarius, so I will befriend you. Talk, and then I'll like disappear for years at a time. But not because I don't love you, just because I be gone. I don't know what it is. It's just a weird trait of mine. But I love to be able to say that I've been friends with somebody for a certain amount of years. I feel like not a lot of people can say that. If you keep your friends, it enriches your life. Old friends. That's my feel about it.
I have a few friends that I've had a really long time, but not many. And I think my oldest friend is my friend Mari. And we've been through so much shit together. I mean, every first. Like, I was born on August 6th. She was born on August 8th. We were both born at Cedar Sinai. We went to Mommy and Me together. She literally is more like a sister than a friend. We've gone through periods of our life where we don't talk to each other. But every first you could imagine in a life, we've been there. We've seen our parents.
Was she one of the ones in the bathroom?
No. Oh, we've okay. seen our friends. I mean, we've seen our parents get divorced, the birth of my sister, remarriages. I remember when Marielle ran through a glass door, and she and her brother were running around their house, and he closed the glass door to stop her. And instead, she didn't stop quickly enough. She ended up running through it. She put her arms up. She tore up her arm. She still has the scars. She got many stitches. But the way I found out about it was that her mom wrapped her up in a blanket and stood on the curb waiting for the ambulance to come, because she was just pouring blood and completely cut up. So her mother just waited, held her there. And a neighbor friend of ours happened to drive by, because Mari used to live on Larchmont, and saw her and called us, knowing that like she was my closest friend, and was basically like, you have to check, something really bad has happened, an ambulance is coming. And I saw Dominique on the street with Marielle wrapped up.
Dominique is Marielle's mother.
Yeah. So that was crazy. And then I remember finding out she got, I mean, hundreds of stitches, like her arms were, it was bad. Poor thing. That was a scary one. I love Mari.
Hey, Mari. Come on over for some oxtails, dude.
Hi, dear.
Uber drivers. Go ahead.
So I was at the club with a friend of mine. His name is Thump. What up, Thump? And it was one of our single night outs, and we were thriving, killing it. Drunk as hell. And we get in an Uber. I fall asleep. He falls asleep. There might have been a regurgitation of liquids. Might have been. And I just remember, goodness gracious, I just remember the Uber driver, and I was like, I feel so bad for you, bro, that you have to deal with me and my friend right now. But that was a long drive home. I think we were coming from the west side back to the valley. And but it's cool. I enjoy the Uber drivers that like to talk about real things, not the ones that just like to shoot the shit. And I like a clean Uber. Clean Uber is very important, you guys. If you don't have a clean Uber, open the windows. Just let it air out, because you're in that car all day. I can smell all the smells, unless you have a Febreze thing. Fix it, fix it, fix it.
We recently were in an Uber coming back from the Jonas Brothers concert, And this Uber driver, first of all, wore a perfume or had scent in her Uber that made me instantaneously sick. My head just was like, goodbye. And then she just wouldn't stop talking. And she just talked the whole way. And it started simple and friendly, like, hi, how are you? What concert did you see? Or what event were you at? Oh, yeah, I know the Jonas. Okay, cool, cool. But by the time we were like going over Laurel Canyon, this woman is like, and then my three kids went here and I was over here and I didn't know what to tell them because I was really, and you know, oh my gosh, has Laurel Canyon changed? I think that they've like repaved this. And I was just like, lady, it was so over the top and so much conversation that I
Do you remember the Uber driver who kept telling us about how important her car purchase was? She was taking us to the airport and she was like, well, this is a F-1-1750. Oh, my goodness. When the Uber drivers are so proud of the car and they start telling the market price and how they negotiated the price for this one. And I have a fleet and I'm like, this is not a black. This is an Uber service.
Oh, gosh. So good.
Yeah.
You guys are working really hard and we appreciate your service. If it wasn't for Uber, I would have not be able to get home sometime. So I'm not coming for y'all. Thank you for your service. Clean your car. All right. Is this we're still going. The ocean and the beach. One of the fond memories I have of my family is that we did go to the ocean and the beach. It was probably every 2 weeks and we'd pack up the car when we were living in LA and we would go to Venice and we would sit down on the beach. Especially when we were younger, there was this guy named Cecil that used to make the most delicious guacamole. And it was just a way to decompress from all the stress from Hollywood. And that's one of the better memories that I have for my family. I miss a beach trip. I love the sun and I love sand and activities in the water. My brother used to get in the water a lot. That was a good memories.
The beach. So my family went to the beach a lot. We used to go to this place called the Miramar in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I know the Miramar.
And it's gone. It's been gone. I mean, I wish it was still there because it was the perfect, like, little cabins on the beach with the train that ran through and the one train car that sold the hot dogs, and we would put pennies on the train tracks and they would get all flattened out, but we would just go for the weekend and spend a weekend on the beach in these little beach shacks that nowadays, if that still existed, it would be thousands of dollars. And you know, back then it was like $100 a night. You know, it was simple and easy. And it was perfect, though. You would literally open your hotel room door and you were just on the sand and would just play. I used to love to boogie board. There was that game that my sister and I used to love, which was the Velcro mitts and you throw a ball and
Nerf
catch
balls.
It. So we would play it. They weren't Nerf balls, actually. It was it's like a tennis ball and then like the round paddle.
The
and
thing
they,
that you bought me to help me learn how to get.
Yeah, and they stick. They stick to it. So we would play that. That was one of my favorite games. I used to play that for hours, build sandcastles. But that was my favorite beach memory.
Did you ever go to the beach closer to town?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, growing up, sure. At Malibu, Zuma, Santa Monica. Santa Monica has become so icky, though. It's such a bummer. Just so much, like, trash and stuff on it.
It is a lot of trash.
Yeah.
That's the sad part. Times, those childhood memories kind of just get covered up by the next generation and not really knowing that you're covering this up with, you know, I don't know, an Air One and a 7-Eleven when it used to be mom and pop shops and conch shells. I don't know. It's just nostalgia in a
great
way.
Not conch shells.
Good times.
Cafeteria.
There's multiple cafeterias in my life. There's a cafeteria at work, and then there's a cafeteria at school. But I'm going to tell you the one about at school. Elementary school in Alpharetta, Georgia. Findlay Oaks Elementary School. Cafeteria. I wasn't allowed to eat pork or beef, so it was very, very limiting when I could actually eat the food. I could never have the tacos. I could never have the pizza unless there was cheese, but mostly it was pepperoni. But my day to shine was chicken cutlet day. Chicken cutlet sandwich day. People knew, save your cutlet for Raven, give it to her. But I would make a sauce in the cafeteria line. And everyone came up to my table to get this sauce. DeAndrea, Lakia, Kelly, y'all remember. Barbecue sauce, ranch, mustard, honey mustard, ketchup, a little bit of mayo. honey mustard. Did I say that? You mix them all together, and you put your fry in it, and you put it on that chicken cutlet. And the chicken cutlet, now that I taste it, it's just bread and fake meat. But it was delicious! And I used to love to go to the cafeteria because that was when, obviously, everybody would come together. You would see your friends that are not in class, blah, 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 blah. But I would also hate it because my choice of food was so small. And I was also always judged about my weight. So I was like, I don't want a salad. I want a chicken cutlet sandwich. And it just started to get worse and worse because then there was chicken biscuits at high school. Ooh, chicken biscuits. Ooh, so delicious. And then, of course, the commissaries at Warner Brothers, which was so good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I've ever really been to a cafeteria unless maybe like a hospital cafeteria. But the commissary, and I'm not sure what's the difference. Is a commissary just a fancy cafeteria?
I mean, the cafeteria is also like a... like a self serving, somebody serves you. I think that's one of the differences because there was a thing called Piccadilly in the South, and that was known as a cafeteria. And you walk in line and there's food laid out and then they serve it to you. So I think that's the difference. I don't know.
But my real experience, like you said, was the commissary at Warner Brothers. And I loved going to the commissary. And I would get usually a turkey or a tuna sandwich. It was delish.
I'm sorry that you didn't get to experience school food in its glory.
I really don't feel like I'm missing anything. I'm cool about
it. Oh, you're so missing. There is a smell and a texture to school food that changes the dynamic of your cells for life. You, like, put down below, is it tacos, pizza, burger, and don't forget pasta day. Pasta day? You guys, I went to public school. I know the food.
Sloppy Joe's. I had a Sloppy Joe.
Sloppy Joe's. Oh my God, I was so mad I never got to really experience any of that. Airport lounge. I have lived in airport lounges since I can remember. Not like Tom Hanks.
He lived in a terminal.
My favorite airport lounge story was when my brother and I were on our way to South Africa, and he and I were sitting with this guy who was helping us with Disney. And he introduced us to the Bramble, which is one of the most delicious drinks, gin and mushed blackberries. And my brother and I just sat there. Obviously, we didn't pay for this ticket. Somebody else paid for it, which is why we're in the lounge. If it was us, we would have been in the coach section in those hard-ass chairs. And I just remember my brother sitting there really enjoying the fact and getting tipsy as fuck before we got on the plane. And then we hopped from lounge to lounge, making our way through South Africa up to London. And a lounge is interesting. The food is disgusting. Just let's be 100. It's a little bit of cafeteria style. Serve yourself brunch looking nastiness. But like, we pay a lot of money. Okay, I'm gonna need more than a square of cheese and, you know, some salami here and there. But I really do remember those big old cream chairs, and my brother was sitting across from me, and we both tasted a Bramble for the first time at the lounge, and they made it so well. Good memories, good memories.
I don't really have much to say about airport lounges, to be honest. I have been in several. Oftentimes, I find them overrated. Meaning you think you're going to get something and then it's kind of like, eh, like I would almost rather sit at my gate sometimes, especially I know that people say now that I haven't been to Delta One, but I know that people are like, oh, the massage.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So people say it's amazing. So I haven't gotten to experience amazing. I've seen some travel YouTubers who have been in amazing international lounges like Dubai and like other places. But here in the States, I'm always underwhelmed. I remember being at an airport lounge with you. It was extremely crowded. We finally found a seat and you went off to get food. And I was sitting there and there was a gentleman who was watching his show. He was listening to it on level 78. It was so loud. And I thought, this is crazy. Like, airport etiquette to me, people, like, forget it. And I have said this before, but I literally feel like people in airports are acting like it's their first day on Earth. Like, they don't know what they're doing, and it's just chaos. But this guy, I was like, this is crazy. You're listening to this show. It's so loud. It sounded like it was, like, in Mumbai or something. Like, it was just, like, street horns and yelling and, like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I just wanted to get out of the lounge and just go away.
Some of my problems with airport lounges, too, is that sometimes they don't allow you food from outside. Why? Sometimes they don't allow dogs, or they can't be out and about. And it's like, my dog has to get on a long plane ride, too. Why can't they breathe outside of their case? And the chair choices are not the best. And you only have maybe 5 or 6 recliner chairs, and all the other ones are, like, super erect. Like, I'm paying for this, bro. And then the American Express lounge versus the first class lounge.
There's also just so many. It's confusing.
It is very confusing. I don't appreciate it, except for the one that I went to with my brother. That was great, but that was also really expensive, and you pay money to go do those things.
Let's toast. Today, we are toasting to the Oregon Health and Science University.
What up, Oregon Health and Science University?
Researchers at Oregon Health and Science University have accomplished a unique proof of concept to treat infertility by turning skin cells into eggs capable of producing early human embryos.
Okay.
In addition to offering hope for millions of people with infertility due to lack of eggs or sperm, this method would allow for the possibility of same-sex couples to have a child genetically related to both parents.
Okay. You go, girl. You get it, girl.
You go, girl.
Get it, girl. How do you feel about that? Because I think I know about this. And when we heard about something like this, is this the one where they scrape the cells?
Yeah, I showed it to you.
You had such a wonderful response.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I was like, wow, this is actually going to be amazing for so many same-sex couples. Or anyone, I guess, who's trying to reproduce. But I think specifically for same-sex couples who understand the feeling of wishing that they could create a life together. And I think that when you are with a person and you're in love, sometimes you just have that thought of like, oh, I wish I could see a little us. And the fact that that maybe one day is possible is super, super cool.
I think it's wonderful. And I think instead of a whole bunch of hormones and, you know, wrecking our body's balance by whatever the process is now, this is another non-ish invasive way. Can't wait to see how much you're going to charge for it. This is going to be exciting to know that. We'll see. Anyway,
science is cool.
Science is cool. And you know what? So are you guys. Thank you so much for watching Tea Time today. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and go down in the comments if you want to be in a multi-person relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, do that.
Raven seeking.
Hell nah.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.